Thank you, everyone, for being a part of today's Awaken call. We will have a moderated conversation between Birju and Audrey, following which I will open it up for all of you to ask questions to Audrey. So thanks again for joining. And let me introduce the seed question for today's circle of sharing. Since Audrey is our guest today, and she's known for her flower-shaped sticky notes or vegan chocolate chip cookies or other small acts of kindness that she does. And so today's topic is going to be around that. So she actually, what Audrey does is, does these small acts of kindness from a real good space within her with a lot of love, and that just makes such a huge difference. And so I wanted to just put this question for everyone. When we think of sharing touching acts of service or kindness or love, are we actually giving or are we receiving, or is it both? Handing it over to Birju, who is another master of acts of kindness, but I won't go into it now. And Birju, I'm handing it over to you so that you can take it away and lead the conversation with the amazing angel Audrey.
Thank you so much, Kanchan. I think today's opening wisdom council is a testament to the conversation that we're about to have, and I'm grateful for the opportunity that we can all be joined by a servant leader in the service-based ecosystem, Audrey Lin. Audrey's journey has taken her across many landscapes within and without, and her value in my heart and clearly so many hearts just seems to defy a particular role or traditional job description. And yet, she's played roles. She's played a role of sustainability educator, nonviolence teacher, monastic, volunteer for this particular weekly call, and even, as has been mentioned, a roadie. So, Audrey, thanks so much for joining us in this role today.
Thank you, Birju, and thank you, everyone that shared stories. It was really nice to hear all of you. And I feel like I've definitely been on the receiving end of all of you. So.
How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling fine. It was a little funny to be on the other end of this call, so. But it's good. It's nice to hear. And I like this topic a lot.
Wonderful, and I'm sure it'll provide lots of opportunities for you to share stories. And I want to start early on that this idea of invisible kindness and moving forward as a practice of that, this doesn't just happen on its own. So I'm wondering how you first came across this concept as something more than something you do with your family or do in private.
I think I probably subconsciously came across this concept since I was a little kid from my parents, because they would just always do so many small acts of love as my parents, and I always just took it for granted. You know, like my mom would come home late from work, and she would still cook us dinner, even though she was probably tired, and my dad would, you know, randomly, like, I would be, I don't know, maybe like 3 or 4 years old, and I remember one time sitting in the car, and my dad was driving us somewhere, and like we pulled over to a store, and he just comes out with like 2 big stuffed animals, one for me, one for my sister, and just like little things like that, and he had so much joy in it, but I think I just soaked that in. I didn't really, you know, notice it or think consciously of it, and then I think when I got older and just encountered the idea of doing a random act of kindness and just started doing it, inspired by people in this community, just like Mindy was saying earlier about how, a lot of people were saying earlier about how just in doing something small, visibly or invisibly, it just, there's something inside that just smiles. and it just, I don't know, for me, I feel like I receive so much from doing that.
And how did that connection point of finding others that share that value set play out for you? For instance, I know that when you were at Berkeley, you spent a lot of time connected to the Nonviolence Center over there. What was the role in connecting in with this kind of movement and others?
When I was a student in college, I went in my freshman year thinking I'd, you know, study philosophy or English or something, and then I took a ethnic studies class, and I started learning about all these different social issues that I hadn't known about before. And there was something that in me that just felt like, wow, we should do something. And I think there's also a lot of it was in the environment around me. There was so much activity. There were so many people doing things, you know, save this or help that or, you know, fight for this cause and that. And so that I got really into that and pulled into that. And I wanted to fight for this cause and fight for that cause. And then I think in my sophomore year in college, I started realizing, like, wow, everyone's fighting for peace, you know? Like, everyone's so angry about, like, all this injustice and things not being fair. And yeah, there is that, but aren't we trying to, like, make things better? So then I thought, I got to learn about Gandhi, and I got to learn about nonviolence, because I've been learning about all the other stuff, And here was an example that where they, you know, embodied the change that they wanted to see. So then I spent the summer with a nonviolent center. It's called the Metta Center for Nonviolence Education in Berkeley, doing a nonviolence mentorship program. And in that summer, I think I learned about all these people I'd never heard about before, like Aung San Suu Kyi, Dorothy Day, you know, all these people that really embodied nonviolence and practiced it and sought to live their lives in it. And I also learned about meditation, and it just really transformed me, just being exposed to those stories of possibility that I hadn't known about before, like Keith Pilgrim or, you know, just different people. Doing their small little bit in the world. And so through that, I learned about Awaken gatherings. And so I just ended up at one, and then I just kept going back and then slowly started to learn more about other service-based projects and meet more people in the community. It just felt right. And then I think at the end of that summer, Karma Kitchen reopened in Berkeley, and I remember the opening day I went to volunteer, and it was just so, I don't know, such a joyful day experience for me. You know, just serving up naan or, like, trying to blow people away with generosity. I don't know. There was just something in it that just felt right. And it didn't feel like the, it was very, like, a very different quality than the social justice, like, activist type of making things better. It felt like a very kind of subtle, universal, very human way of making people, I don't know, just making things peaceful in a very just simple way.
I'm wondering, just building on what you're saying, what you feel, or if you feel there is a connection between that place that you were exposed to earlier with social justice or fighting for peace, as you said, and this other side of nonviolence and you know, stillness within as a pathway? I don't know if you see it that way.
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Well, it certainly seems like Karma Kitchen is not necessarily going in the same vein as social justice work. And so I was wondering if you saw them as connected.
I don't know. I think on some levels they might be connected, and other levels they're not. I feel like in my own personal experience, when I've sought to do work with a more social justice lens, with the idea that maybe I want to eliminate poverty or I want to, you know, do something that will shift something. I feel like looking back when I've done that, I kind of have a little bit of a blinder up And I don't really see, I kind of judge people more, or I kind of have like a, maybe not necessarily an agenda, but just kind of a something inside me that I'm projecting out. Whereas when I've done, I don't know, when I volunteered at Karma Kitchen or done something a little bit more, less, maybe less from a social justice lens, I've been a little bit more open to whoever's in front of me. And I feel like I don't know, my walls come down a little bit more, if that makes sense.
Yes, very, very much so. That direction of walking towards contemplation and non-judgment, you know, since you mentioned awaken, I would love to talk about this idea of sacred walking. So 1 week, as I understand it, you decided to walk clear across the San Francisco Bay Area, about 50 miles, in journeying to the awaken meditation spot in Silicon Valley. And I'm wondering if you could share what the inspiration for that was.
Yeah. I think that was at the end of, after when I did that nonviolence mentorship, when I was in college. And at the end of that, it had finished up, and I just spent the summer learning and being exposed to all these new stories, all these new people. And then I remember I had a week before my classes started again. So I had this week of, you know, of limbo, of nothing that I needed to do. And I didn't know what I should do. And so so then I went for a run, because at that point, every time I didn't know what to do, I just go for a run. And before the run, I just kind of asked, I just put the question out there. I just said, you know, help me see what to do. And with this week, like, what should I do? And so I went running. And then whenever you put, like, a question out there, you see the answers everywhere. So, you know, I remember running, and it was, like, near sunset, and the sky was purple, and I was like, maybe that's something. And then I kept running, and I had this thought that maybe it'd be nice to go out into nature, you know, maybe go backpacking or something. But I don't know, I just kept running. And then as I was coming back, I remembered this conversation I had with a man who was homeless. His name was Ken. And there was one day where we were on the street, and he was just handing out these street spirit papers, you know, where you can buy it for like $1 or $2, and it helps him, you know, have an income. And I noticed he was offering the papers to everyone, but they were just kind of walking by him. And so finally I was like, can I like buy you dinner or something? And he was like, sure. And then I realized I didn't have my wallet. And I was like, oh, I don't have my wallet. I can't buy you dinner. And then he was like, that's okay. And then he said, you know, I'm not like an entitled person. I don't feel like just because you have things and I don't, that it's not fair. It's all good or something. And I remember being like, wow, that's really interesting. And then we started talking, and we started talking about just like the concept of God, or, you know, or that bigger, those bigger picture ideas. And he was telling me this story about how there was a time when he really wanted to, when he was living in an apartment, and he woke up one day and he really wanted to do drugs. And then he just prayed. And so then when he finished, he got this urge to do the dishes. So then he started doing the dishes and cleaning his kitchen. And then when he finished that, he started, you know, cleaning his living room, and eventually he cleaned the whole apartment. And then when he finished, there was a knock at his door, and it was his sister, who he hadn't seen in years. And they had lost touch. He didn't even know how she knew that he was there, but she said that, you know, she got the information through other people, and so she came in, and they had a really nice time. And so, and I remember from that, he just said, so that voice inside you is always there. You just have to listen to it. You know, you just have to take that stillness to listen to it. And I remember thinking this as I was running, and I was like, okay, Ken, what is my voice inside telling me? And this thought just popped into my head to walk to Santa Clara. And I guess I had always at that point I was in college and I was really asking very earnest questions. And I remember driving to Santa Clara for the Awaken gatherings there from Berkeley, which is an hour and sometimes an hour and a half in traffic. And, you know, and then we drive an hour back and I thought, wow, it's kind of ironic that we drive an hour to meditate for an hour and then drive back an hour. And so like we're kind of using up all this, you know, fuel and putting out pollution in the environment, but for some sort of inner peace. And so so I thought one day we should just walk. And I think I remember at one of those circles, or someone had mentioned James Francis, who is also nicknamed Planet Walker, who had, after an oil spill in the 1970s, he ended up walking. He stopped driving. He decided to do something, so he stopped driving. And he walked, I think, for 22 years, and he was silent for 17 of them. And he walked across the U.S. And he ended up getting his undergrad, master's, and PhD degrees along the way, and it was really interesting. And so just all these little kind of ideas had kind of been seeded in me, and I'd been kind of brewing on them. And so at that point, during that run, I was like, oh, I should just walk to Santa Clara. And this was a Saturday. And I remember I sent out an email to a bunch of folks that I had been carpooling down with and asked if anyone wanted to join. I was like, I'm going to leave on Monday. and, of course, everyone, you know, had other responsibilities or other things that they had already planned to do. But that was kind of, I guess, how that ended up happening.
Mm. Thank you for the backstory. Not something I was familiar with at all. And of course, connected to this element that I consider as a core piece of what it seems like you're passionate about. So I was wondering if you could share a bit more about that, the role of contemplative practice in your life and how you process the value it's offered to you.
Oh, man. I think I've gone through different phases with it. So when I first got introduced to meditation, I think it was actually in a college class where my professor, Americ Azevedo, who was actually an Awakened Call guest before, he used to start his seminar. I took a seminar with him, and it was like 10 students. It was called Peace on Earth, the Golden Rule, and World Religions. And he used to start each seminar with like 5 minutes of silence, and he just called it arriving. He used to say, you know, we're going to arrive because we come into this room carrying so much from the rest of our day that we're just spend a minute or two or five in silence to just arrive. And just having that visceral experience of really feeling like I would walk into that room carrying whatever else had, you know, the conversation I just had or whatever paper I had due or anything, you know, you could feel that energy walk into the room and then it would dissipate when we would just sit there and be quiet. And that really impacted me. And then I started learning about meditation. I think maybe a year later, I learned about these 10-day meditation retreats. And so I went on one and felt very kind of viscerally changed by that. And then that also, I think one of the insights I got from that retreat was before, I used to see kind of suffering in a very material way, like if the haves and have-nots way, like if the haves are not suffering and the have-nots are suffering. You know, if you're hungry, you're suffering, or if you don't have means for things, you're suffering. But I think through that meditation retreat, one of the things I realized was, oh, wow, suffering is everywhere. You know, even when we have things, we're suffering because we want to cling to them. And that's just as much, I mean, it's a different degree of suffering, different level, I guess, but it's still a very real form of it. And so and at that point, I had also really been wanting to still do a lot, you know, to bring justice to the world also. But I think slowly through getting more into meditation or contemplative practices, I started to wonder, like, how much am I actually doing? You know, how much is, like, what do I really think I'm doing? And I start to feel like, you know, a wheel that's being spun in mud. It's not moving. It's just spinning and, you know, expending energy, but not going anywhere. I started to feel like that, and because I started to notice how much internally I was feeling agitated, or how much internally I was kind of, you know, maybe not so balanced. And so, so then I was like, man, I just got to meditate more. And so I think I swung a little bit in that direction, a little maybe too much. And I ended up, I spent 6 months volunteering at a monastery in Northern California, and which was a very powerful experience. And I learned a lot. But I think when I look back on it, I think maybe it's definitely the middle way, like for me at least. And I think now my view of it is that they're not necessarily at odds. Like, it's not like, oh, you either meditate or you do work in the world. But now more and more I'm looking at it as, how can I blend that, and how is doing work in the world also a meditation, and how is meditation also, you know, doing? So it's like that doobie-doobie-doo, like the balance of doing and being and doing and being.
Mm. So that brings up a question for me, which is this based on this integration. So one time I'm thinking back to when you and I were in India together, which is a place you've spent significant time doing, I'd call it upliftment work. And while they're headed to an activity that was tied to service, I mentioned that it might be a little difficult because you didn't speak the language. And you told me, and I don't know if you remember this, that it was all right because in this kind of work that we all do, we all speak the language of love. And I'm hoping that you might be able to talk a little bit about that. You know, what is that language of love, and how have you been able to transcend cultural boundaries through this integration of inner and outer?
Well, you were there, Birju. I think half of it is just the being around people with shared values, right? So so things like kindness, things like gratitude, that's so universal, and everyone can understand it. And when you tap into that, it's almost like the languages we speak, the histories that we come from, they're relevant, but they're also irrelevant. And I don't know, I remember there one evening, I think when you were there, I'm not sure, a couple of years ago, we were at, it was New Year's Eve, and we all slept out in the slums with different families. They hosted us. And I remember I had been paired up with Champra Ben, who is a vegetable seller, and so I went to her home, and another person went with me who spoke English and the local language. And so he was kind of like our translator. But throughout the evening, and we met her family, and they served us this amazing dinner. And then later on, he got sick, and he had to leave, the person that was with me. And so then the rest of the evening and the next day, when I was shadowing her selling vegetables on the street, we didn't have a common language. And it almost didn't matter. And part of it was because of the way we were connected. We were connected through family in a way. And I say family in the sense of, you know, people that share values. I remember when I got paired up with her, a mentor that many of us know, Jayeshbhai, was there, and he took me in one arm and her in another arm, and he pointed at Champra Ben and said, "This is my sister." And then he pointed at me and said, "This is my daughter." And then he said, "So this is your aunt, and this is, you know, your niece, basically." And that kind of sealed the deal, you know, when you're connected through so much, you know, such a connection of love. There's no doubt in your mind. There's no discord in your mind. It's just pure trust. And so, so throughout the next day, you know, I wouldn't really know maybe the vocal language, but you can just see it in mannerisms. You can see it in other ways. And so, yeah.
I really appreciate that background to explain the process. I actually wasn't there during that time, so very helpful.
You had left. It was like you were there. Your spirit was there.
Aw, that's an Audreyism. So one element that I notice about your approach, you know, talking through this background of the arc of your journey is the open-mindedness with which you approach the moment. And clearly there seems to be a guiding light behind it. And yet it may come across as something that's a bit different from what the journey of most people. Earlier this year, you decided to join another service-based volunteer, Nemo Patel, for this cross-country music pilgrimage. And I know some people would look at this and wonder about what is the narrative that ties this experience with what you just mentioned with, you know, the time volunteering at a monastery and how it all holds together. And yet in engaging with you, it feels like there's such a clarity in why the activity is so valuable in your journey. So I'm just wondering if you could share more about what is that guiding force that brings the clarity of saying this is the right thing as a next step.
That's a good question. I don't know that there's always clarity, but I think in deciding to join Nemo and the Empty Hands Tour, I mean, first of all, it's an honor, but second of all, I think just his sincerity in you know, embarking on this music pilgrimage and in the way that he wanted to do it and his intention for it was just so sincere. And I feel like sometimes sincerity, like, is such a security because it's almost like it's like the way you see the world with that sense of trust and that sense of wanting to see the good. And in that way, that kind of protects you from a lot of things. So I think in choosing to join him, I just was kind of, I mean, it was an honor, but it was also, just the sincerity in him to do it and the, you know, the integrity with which he carried out and is carrying, continues to carry out the pilgrimage. I felt like there's so much to learn from that and, so many ways to grow, and I know for me personally, I want to grow in sincerity. I want to grow in truth. I want to grow in kindness. And so, anything that can kind of any space where that can happen is the right decision, I think. And also, you know, there's always the, you know, you want to be practical and responsible, and I'm working on that too. But I think when I, lately, this last year, actually, one of the things that has really propelled me is actually my father's death a year and a half ago now. And when he passed away, I made a promise to myself that I would never, or I would try as much as I could not to make decisions or take action based on ego or fear. Because life is too short for that, you know, and just seeing his body, you know, dead and really impacted me. And it really just made me think, wow, I'm going to be like this too one day. And I don't want to, like, all those other things are just so silly, you know, so beside the point, all those little fears we have, all those little kind of, egoic thoughts, and yes, they're also human too, and there are things that I struggle with daily, but at the end of the day, what if, you know, what if I die tonight, and if that happens, what will it have all been for? So when he passed, I thought, well, I'm going to try to just, you know, when I think about what's the right decision to make, I also ask myself now, like, what am I afraid of, and you know, what are any of my doubts or any of things that are holding me back? Is that any of that in my ego or fear?
Wow. I'm just feeling really moved by the rawness of your sharing today. I wasn't planning on asking that question, and just to have you go there, I feel like is a really, it's a blessing for all of us to get that insight. And I'm reflecting on my own history and you know, graduating school and hearing people decide between which company they wanted to work for, you know, pick your banking organization. And then I'm juxtaposing that with your comment of saying, I want to optimize to grow in generosity and kindness, and how that criteria would impact so many decisions in so many different ways if people took it on.
Yeah. And it also,
go ahead.
I think it also, I mean, it doesn't have to be, I feel like that criteria is also so universal, right? Like it can happen in your personal life, it can happen in your work life, it can happen in so many different areas. So it's never like an either or either.
I love it. And I'm thinking I'd love to ask many more questions, but I'd love to focus on maybe one more, and then Gunshan, maybe we could shift over to Q&A from the group.
Sure, sounds good, Vision.
Great. So Audrey, I wanted to connect back in with this theme of invisible kindness, and I'm curious how you stay motivated to keep on being engaged with it. At least from where I sit. Like the world that I see every day really values the big stuff, the measurable stuff, the stuff that you get returns on very quickly, so that you know it's not super long term. And here I see you totally flipping that on its head, and you're doing it with this heart of love. But I know that it's not easy to stick to that path when everything around you is constantly saying that doesn't make sense, or it's immature, or it's impractical. And I'm just wondering, like, what keeps you going in the face of that?
I mean, I think you know the feeling when you do like a little, like when you just do something small, and even if you don't feel like doing it, but you just do it anyway. And then, I don't know, there's something that shifts. I feel like when I do little acts of kindness, it makes me more present and more grateful. And it makes me, whatever kind of worries or concerns that I'm riding at that moment, it kind of puts a stop on that for at least a couple minutes and opens me up to what's right in front of me. I remember actually this summer, Nemo and I, we were driving, I think, through from Texas to New Mexico or New Mexico to Colorado, and we stopped at a grocery store. We were driving to Colorado. We stopped at a grocery store, and we picked up a bunch of flowers, and we thought, you know, in honor of this one person we met earlier, let's give out flowers. And so we're standing in this like Safeway parking lot giving flowers to people, and the first woman I gave a flower to, she just stopped, and she just said, "Wow, you just made my day." And, of course, that was really rewarding. But then, you know, the next person I gave a flower to, they were like, no, thank you. and I definitely, I think it was like a 60% to 40% like acceptance, like rejection ratio. But in all of that, it was just kind of like, it's like a metaphor for life, right? Like sometimes it's good, like sometimes it's pleasant and people receive you very well, and sometimes people misunderstand you, or maybe you misunderstand them, and so you win some, you lose some, but in any case, it's like it put a little giddiness in my heart, and it lifted my day low. And we also met this guy from Texas, and he was like, "Wow, this is so awesome. You're just, why are you doing this?" And we were like, "Why not?" And he said, "Wow, why not? That's awesome." And he like took a picture of the flower, and like we had smile cards. He took a picture of the smile card, and then he was driving back to Texas with a friend, and he was like, "They're just giving out flowers for no reason." And I don't know, something in him, like, you know, it's so universal, it just translates in so many ways. It's interesting. I think also the other thing that came to mind with that question, Birju, is a few weeks ago, my computer broke and I had to go get it fixed. And I remember walking into the Apple store and, it turned out a part needed to get replaced. And so they went and did that. And when I got the bill for it, it actually didn't cost me anything. And it was because when I had gotten the computer, I also gotten the AppleCare that came with it. And but it was actually this really interesting moment because my dad had gifted me the computer, and when we went to buy it, the woman at the cash register said, "You know, would you like to buy AppleCare too?" And my dad was like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. She needs AppleCare. She's gonna spill stuff on it and all this stuff." and so we got the care for it. And so it was just this kind of, I don't know, chilling moment in a way of receiving an act of kindness from my father who had already passed away. But it, for me, it was like the moment that isolated kindness, right? And, you know, there's that song by Jewel, like, it's in the end, only kindness matters. I know it sounds cheesy, but it's like at the end of the day, all of us are going to pass, right? Like, we're not permanent. We're all going to go. But what stays behind are those little small acts, like the acts that I received from my parents. Those are acts paid forward for maybe their family, you know, my grandparents, and the acts that we teach each other, you know, that gets paid forward in so many ways. And so it's just such a, we never really know where it's all coming from, but there's, at the end of the day, I feel like that's kind of what makes the world go round. That's kind of what makes me want to keep living.
Audrey, I'm so grateful that you're sharing. I wanted to end the moderated piece of the discussion by just reading a short note that was sent from Nimmo Patel, who went on the music pilgrimage with you earlier this year for everyone to hear. He writes, "Dear family, I wish I could be on this phone call right now and share my feelings about this young girl, my dear little sister, a mentor, an angel, a very noble friend. Spending the last few months with Audrey has been a wonderful lifelong memory. She truly blessed the Empty Hands pilgrimage with her grace, her joy, and her kindness. Everywhere we'd go, she transformed strangers into lifelong friends within hours. Her smile and spirit was as strong on day 60 as on day 1. We meet so many wonderful and amazing people, but I think for me, Audrey hits my heart with amazingness through her pure intention, selflessness, and purity. Audrey, thank you for being a guiding light and true noble soul. Love you, my dear sister, Nemo." Wow.
Nemo G! You're going to have to watch it back now! That was really sweet.
Yeah, that's so sweet. And we also got a note from Amit, Audrey, your other big brother, who really, really wanted to be on this call, but could not today. So there's so many people who want to be on this call, and there's so much love pouring in from everywhere, Audrey. I love you too. We're going to start with the Q&A session now. And
hi, this is Mish again from Kind Spring with a very brief comment. This has been wonderful, and Nemo's comments about Audrey brought tears. What Audrey spoke about with her connection to the fruit cellar just made me go to the power of kindness, because kindness just creates a connection of great beauty. The last 5 weeks, I opened my home to 6 KindSpring members none of us had ever met before, and it was like meeting family. I'm not exaggerating. There was no awkwardness. We embraced like we had known each other forever, and that's the power of kindness, and it's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mish.
Hi, my name is Harpreet. I'm calling from California. And I just wanted to just comment that I haven't known Audrey for very long, but I did notice meeting her that there was something very sparkly about her. And every time I look at her, I do see sparkles, literally. I mean, you know. And I could tell that there was something different about this young lady. But after listening to this call today, this is my first call, I am just, I feel my heart just opening up in, I guess, in resonance. And I need all the help I can get because my heart has been closed for a long, long time. And just coming to the circles has kind of shown me that I don't know how it's possible to have such an open heart like the Mama Harshita and Papa Dinesh have, to do what they do. But I wanted to ask Audrey, if she ever felt, would she be able to open up as much or how to do it, or did it just happen, with the flow of her life? Because obviously she is, she's an ascended being from the past life, and she's brought all her wisdom here for all of us to share. So I really thank you, Audrey. And if you have any answer to that question, I'd love to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you, Harpreet. It's so nice to hear your voice on a Saturday.
Yeah, usually I'm sleeping at this time.
I think that's a great question about, how do we stay open, or how do we even open up? And I go through my phases, I think. I think what I've noticed is what helps me open up is just being in a community of that kind of love and trust. I definitely think that I notice that when I isolate myself, or when I kind of feel like I need to do things on my own or whatever it is, I definitely close up more because I'm not as connected with other people. I don't see my humanness in other people as much. But when I'm in a community or in a space with other people who also seek out that space of authenticity, who also seek to be more honest or just want to be real and just want to who are also kind of looking for the truth. In that, I feel like that helps me open up because there's such a genuineness to that. And also, I think kind of what Mish was saying about, when you connect with someone through kindness, you could be perfect strangers with them, but you share that thread of kindness and there's a trust there because, you trust that this person is kind, or this person has that value of kindness. And so, even this summer with Nemo, we saw it time and time again where we would be welcomed into people's homes and we had never met them before, but because of that that thread of kindness, that thread of, of that spirit, there is a trust already there. And then we already felt like family. When I'm around people that remind me of that, that really helps me stay open. And then when I practice looking for that in others, that helps me stay open too. But I think I go through my phases. I think we all go through, the ups and downs of it. And I think that's also necessary because you can't, it's like the yin-yang. You can't know the light without knowing what's dark.
Thank you, Audrey.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Harpreet, for joining. I hope this is not your last time. And hear your voice again.
Thank you.
Audrey, I have a couple of questions from some callers on the email, so I just wanted to kind of read them out. One is from Amit, and he wants to know, how do you approach the edge of humility versus not feeling worthy enough? And the other one is from Wendy, and she wanted to know more about some of your experiences, maybe about being in India, and maybe more something about how you support yourself financially.
I guess For Amit's question about the edge of humility and the feeling of not being worth enough, I remember someone said, It was like, there's a fine line between humility and lack of conviction. And I think for me, that's definitely an edge for me, where, you know, I often have struggled with that feeling of, not feeling like I'm doing enough or not feeling like I'm of value. And then when I notice, when I look back on it now, though, or when I'm thinking about it now, like, those times when I have felt that way, it's almost like in a way also coming from a place of ego, even though it's like you would think it isn't, because you would think like, oh, I'm not enough, so of course it's not my ego, but it totally is, because we're all like, by the fact that we breathe, we're enough, you know, by the fact that we exist on this planet, we're enough, and it's like, if someone doesn't like it, too bad, you're here, right? So why does it matter so much? Or why do we get shaken up by it so much? And there would be days when I was in India where I would struggle with this because, it was a new environment for me and I wanted to be of value and I wanted to offer myself. But I came from that lens, which we in the West maybe come more from, of doing. And I remember... I would constantly want to be doing something because I would constantly want to be offering value. And then if I wasn't doing something, I would feel like, oh man, I'm not good enough. I'm not offering any value. I'm not important or whatever it is. And then slowly I started to realize like, wow, I should just calm down and I should just, just being here is a form of value. It's not like, oh, should I be here? It's like, I'm already here. Why am I even asking that question, And so I think I started to learn a lot of just all the subtler forms of offering value, not so much in how well we can do something necessarily, but, in just the value of the space that we take up, the presence that we offer to a room. And I think... I've started to see more and more of how much, different personalities or different, perspectives, they offer so much value and they color life. But how when we're just thinking of a to-do list or, or have, some impact that we want to make, we forget that because we're focused on that agenda. So for me, I think that's one thing I've been learning a lot in these last 2 years is, when I ask myself those questions of self-worth, I'm realizing that it is kind of coming from a space of ego because it's kind of like this feeling inside me of wanting to be important. And then I'm learning just not to even ask those questions anymore, like to just be like, why do I even question if I'm worth this or if, I'm worth... Or if I'm adding value, it's good to be aware, but it's good not to ask too many questions, which I think not to overthink it, which I tend to do. So, those are my thoughts on that. And then the other question was about being in India and supporting myself financially. I've worked, on and off. So I worked a couple years before I went to India, so I saved up some money and just kind of have, not had a lot of needs, I guess. So I didn't have a lot of expenses. When I graduated from college, I had student loans, but I paid them off after working for a couple years. It's just kind of being mindful of, that. I don't know. I don't really know. It's just,
Thank you, Audrey.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're doing good, I think things just
happen. And I remember one thing you said the last time I met you is that you don't plan too much ahead, right? So you just think taking one step at a time and not thinking of having a lot of savings or but just doing doing good and working when needed and just taking one step at a time, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so it's interesting because now I'm, after spending the last year or so kind of, you know, volunteering or exploring and learning without really focusing on a career or a job, I'm where it's kind of a maybe a transition point. And so I've noticed that when I think maybe, you know, longer term, if I think a month down the line, that's when things start get overwhelming. But when I think just, you know, a couple days in advance, like if I only think the next what's going to happen the next couple of days, what will happen, and just really focus on what's my intention. What if I die tomorrow? Like, when I focus on that, everything feels full and very, you know, like fluid.
Yeah. Thanks, Audrey. Hi, Gayatri.
Thank you, Kanchan. I was muted. Audrey, you're awesome. Do you think that, you know, money comes in the way or is it an aid for you in your act of kindness? Just share what you think. Thank you.
Thanks, Gayatri.
Sure.
And also just to add at that event, you were also in the kitchen doing the dishes and, you know, doing a lot of little small things. So I think in anything, it's always co-created.
Thank you.
And then on the question of money and kindness, I think for a while, and actually now still, I struggle with, you know, just ending up wanting to spend all my money on kindness. and realizing, though, that, like, that there are so many subtle forms of kindness. And so it can be easy to say, oh, I'm going to buy this for this person because, you know, as my act of kindness or just because I want to, you know. But I remember one time when I was living in Boston and I was working at a school there, and a coworker just told me, like, Audrey, you need to, like learn not to, like, just not to spend money for kindness. and I remember being surprised, like, wait, what do you mean? And then I guess for me it's a blind spot, right? Like, I think sometimes I feel like, you know, I need kindness is only through, like, I show my kindness through material love, you know, by, like, buying someone groceries or, you know, tagging someone with flowers or whatever it is. And that's true, and that is also lots of kindness. But I think there's also, you know, just your presence and the way you offer, you know, the way you show up for things is such an act of kindness. And it's more subtle, right? Like, if you show up and you're totally distracted and not paying attention, and that affects people. But when you show up and you really listen and you really bring your whole self and you really, like, you know, ask how can I be of service to this person in front of me, and it often doesn't really necessarily require, you know, financial means, but more just kind of that stillness of presence and that openness of heart.
Thank you, Audrey.
Thank you. Hugs.
Prakash?
Oh, yeah. Kanchan, thank you. Like Gayatri, you and Birju said, I can also see within myself and count millions of things to say thank you, Audrey. At this moment, I think what's coming up is this, you know, definitely your smile. And this thought that you share, usually you always start with, I don't know. And to me, that means a lot, because I think just by saying, you know, coming, anchoring from that space, you sort of accept reality and operate from the space of possibility, from the space of unknown, and from the space of yearning to know, from the space of growing. So I guess I will just, and there is so much more to it. I thought I'll invite you to just reflect on one thing, which is when you say that, to me it seems like it just comes out very organically, naturally. Do you ever put a conscious thought that you want to come from that space, or how does that happen? Thank you.
Thanks, Prakash. Nice to hear your voice. I think I often feel like I don't know, so it might be conscious. It's probably unconscious, but I think was it Socrates or someone who said, like, all that I know is that I don't know anything? I think that's kind of been this a foundation for my learning, actually. And I tend to, I guess, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's because I always end up, when I was growing up, I would always hang out with my sister's friends, and because my older sister's friends, and because they were cooler, and so I wanted to be like them, but I would always be the youngest, so then I would always be in that mode of learning from them, and so I found myself, even when I was a college student, I would spend a lot of time with people that had already graduated, and because I felt like, wow, they have so much more experience, I want to learn from them, and so I don't know, maybe there's just, I don't know, that's a good question. I haven't really thought about that, but I think there's just so much in the world that, there's so much that I don't know, and there's so much that's a mystery. And I think one of my favorite things is to kind of see, like, you know, we're lucky we live in the Bay Area, where I often will go to the top of this hill, and you can kind of see the whole, you know, you can see San Francisco and the Bay and the Golden Gate Bridge and the curve of the horizon. And for me, that's always really grounding, because when I see, you know, that expanse of sky and ocean and the curve of the horizon, and realize, like, what a tiny piece of the puzzle I am, what a minuscule, like, microscopic piece of the puzzle I am, there's something in that makes me feel really alive, because all the other stuff that in my head that makes me feel like I'm big, it kind of dissolves when I see that. And in a way, not knowing kind of helps me keep embracing the days, keep embracing life with those fresh eyes.
May you be eternally blessed, Audrey.
You too.
You. Thank you, Prakash and Audrey. And Audrey, well, I just got a note from Bhautik, you know, another amazing embodiment of invisible acts of kindness, but he just sent me a new word that has been coined in Audrey's name, which is called Audreyed. So when you're a recipient of a random act of kindness, then you've been Audreyed. So I love that. I'm going to use that more often. Thank you, Bhautik. Let's go to our next.
Thank you for sharing this space. It was beautiful. I had a question. My niece was recently lamenting about caring deeply for people and sort of being hurt by it and not being reciprocated, and how she was kind of beating herself up over it. And I tried to turn it around and say, well, consider it a gift that you care so deeply for others. Of course, this was on Facebook, so it started a little conversation. And someone else chimed in and said, well, that's like being a doormat, and basically. And it's certainly, I'm sure you, I don't know, you, I would bet you've never felt like that. But maybe, I don't know, how do you do it? I mean, are there times when you, have you ever thought it's like, you know, I'm caring so much and I'm so loving and it's not always reciprocated. So,
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And that's definitely, I've definitely experienced that before. And I think it kind of, let's see. I think for me, the way I've kind of experienced that and learned from it is really, it's kind of like at Karma Kitchen, right? When you're there, and Karma Kitchen, for those who don't know, is this pay it forward restaurant, and it's like all run by volunteers. And so you go in, you get your meal, and you realize your meal has been paid for by the people that came before, and your bill says $0, and so you can enjoy your meal and then pay it forward in whatever way your heart is moved to. And it's also just a space. This restaurant's kind of this excuse to shower people with love and experience that. So there's a kindness table and all this stuff. And it's kind of like there you start to distinguish the difference between gift and free. Like there's this sense that, you know, when you're really caring, when you're really giving, and it's not so much the fact that it's not reciprocated, but it's also the fact that it's just, maybe it's not valued to certain people. I think for me, one thing I've learned is to surround myself or, you know, just be in environments where there is that circle of trust, right? So like at Karma Kitchen, you're also stepping into the circle of trust rather than transaction. So you are giving, but you're growing internally from the giving, and you're receiving so much, and that trust, I don't know, there's a cycle of trust that's honored in that, where that giving is honored, right? And it's carried forward. And then there are others, and that, in a way, being in that circle recharges me to step out where the circles of trust maybe aren't so strong, and it recharges me in having faith that people can be kind, and that, you know, and there's that glow of generosity, like where that kind of spirit is there, and it reminds me that it's there, and so that then I can, you know, be in other settings where it's not so normal, or it's not so reciprocated, or it's not so honored and sacred. And I can still practice kindness and generosity and do it internally, and not do it, you know, with any sort of expectation that someone is going to respond to it. So it's like being, like giving out flowers in the parking lot, and when people reject it, it's knowing that there's all these people in the world, right? Like you can go on the KindSpring website and just read all these great stories of people that are giving and receiving acts of kindness. And so you know that people resonate with this, and you know there are good people in the world. So when I get rejected or when I get kind of stepped on, I know that that it's not so much, I don't know, that there's that no act of kindness is ever wasted, right? So even if it's not received in a certain way that I think it would be nice if it was, it's still putting out some sort of kindness in the world, and you never know where that ripple goes. But the other thing is also that I've been learning is, like, you also don't want to feed in a cycle of dependency or a cycle where you become the giver and everyone else is the taker. And you don't want to kind of feed that sort of dynamic either. So it's kind of just learning how to make those decisions of what situation you want to be in and knowing, like, you know, like who you want to surround yourself with and what situation you want to be in for where you're at and what you're ready for. Because I know for me, I tend to be a little bit of a softer person, so I have to learn how to be a little bit more street smart and be a little bit more mindful about you know, how I express, what's the most skillful way to express kindness and generosity. Maybe being constantly giving isn't always the way where people can really get that shift internally of what it really means. You know, so those are just some thoughts. That's a really good question.
Thank you, Audrey. And thank you, Bradley, for that question. It's so wonderful to see all our thoughts being reflected from all our callers. Like we started with a minute of silence, let's close the call with a minute of silence as well, this time in deep gratitude for all the stories shared and the inspiration and the acts of kindness, and for Audrey for being such an angel and a sparkling angel, actually. Okay, so thank you, Birju, and thank you, Audrey, and everybody else.